set at last year's Beijing Olympics. Phelps was a body length behind, touching in at 143.22. It was Phelps's first loss in a major international meet since Ian Crocker beat him in the final of the 100 butterfly at the 2005 World Championships. Washington's Josh Willingham belted a pair of Grand Slam home runs in the Nationals' 14-6 win at Milwaukee last night. He's just the 13th player in Major League history to accomplish the feat. White Sox pitcher Mark Burley makes his first appearance tonight since throwing a perfect game against Tampa Bay. Last Thursday, the veteran left-hander is 11-3, headed into his start at Minnesota. Matt Holliday has had an immediate impact for the St. Louis Cardinals, driving in a run in each of his first four games. He looks to keep the hot start going as the Cards host the Los Angeles Dodgers again at Busch Stadium. And Ryan Dempster is scheduled to come off the disabled list and pitch for the Chicago Cubs against the Houston Astros tonight. Dempster fractured his big toe hopping over the dugout railing to celebrate a win on July 5th. The Cubs cling to a half-game edge in the National League Central. That's sports.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Community Blood Services of Illinois, providing all donated blood for patients in Champaign-Urbana, Charleston-Mattoon, Danville, and Effingham. Blood donation takes only 45 minutes and saves lives. Donation information at 367-2202 or on the web at bloodservices.org.
Over the next century, rising sea levels will change coastlines all over the world, but the impact might be most dramatic in southern Louisiana. A study out last month predicts the state will lose up to 5,000 square miles in the next century, a chunk of land the size of Connecticut. If the report's authors are right, that means a lot of people in Louisiana are going to have to relocate, becoming climate refugees. Samara Freemark has the story of one of the first communities to be displaced.
It was sometime in the mid-1970s that Albert Nequin first realized that Île de Jean-Charles was sinking. Nequin had grown up on the island. He's the chief of a group of Choctaws who have lived here since the 19th century. And when he was a kid, it was a pretty good community. It had stores, a couple of churches, horse pastures, and fields. But those are all gone now.
Salt water kept coming in and faster and faster. And now, basically, it's just beach.
Île de Jean-Charles is sinking into the Gulf of Mexico. The list of reasons why is long. There's subsidence, that's the natural phenomenon where delta regions kind of settle down on themselves. There are the dams that block the sediment that used to wash down and build the land back up. There are oil company canals that slice through the wetlands, hurricanes that tear up the island's coastline, and, of course, there's rising sea levels. Altogether, they explain why Île de Jean-Charles used to be about 4 miles across and now has shrunk to a quarter mile.
There we start seeing the disaster of Île de Jean-Charles, or the island, as we call it.
We're in Nequin's pickup truck. He's driving me out to the island.
See this little house here? It's upside down. This one here moved off its location. These one, two, three right here are deserted.
Nequin himself moved off the island a while ago, but for years he was happy to support the families who chose to stay. In fact, when the U.S. government came to him in 2002 and offered to pay to help people move off the island, he resisted.
So they said, what are they going to do? Tell us they're going to move us there, and then next thing they know, they're going to send us a bill for the house? You know, so I had said, no, I said, that's just a modern-day Trail of Tears. You know, we're not moving.
But lately, Nequin has just gotten tired. He's tired of evacuating people before storms, tired of helping them rebuild after, tired of watching the sea nibble away at the island. And so he decided, enough. And for the past year, he's been on a mission to convince the 25 families still living on the island to abandon it.
They're not going to save the island. It's going to be gone. See, either we move now or we move later, because we will move.
But not everyone is ready to leave.
What's you with a fast shark away?
Nequin pulls over to talk to Dominique Dardar. Dardar's house was leveled by Hurricane Gustav last summer. He's rebuilding it with pieces of other houses he's found blowing around the island, bits of roof and siding. Dardar says he's not moving.
I ain't never gonna move from down here, man. I'm still over here. That's my territory.
Across the street, Wenceslas Billiot lives in a house raised 13 feet in the air. Billiot is Nequin's brother-in-law. He's in his 80s and has lived on the island his whole life. I ask him what he'll do if the island shrinks anymore.
That's going to be rough. But I was born and raised on the island. As long as I can stay here, I'm going to stay.
Albert Nakan hasn't given up. He thinks if he can get everyone to agree, the government will help the tribe get a big piece of land where they can all relocate as a group. He's already thinking of names for the new town.
So we could say Island Number 2 or Isle de Jean-Charles New Beginning or something like that, you know. But I think we'd just name it Isle de Jean-Charles 2. I think that would be, it would have a good sound to it.
In short, Nakan is trying to figure out how to keep the idea of Ile de Jean-Charles alive, even when the island itself no longer exists. It's a challenge many Louisiana communities could soon face. For The Environment Report, I'm Samara Freemark.
It's 2:46. The National Weather Service in Lincoln has issued a flash flood warning for northwestern Christian County and southern Sangamon County in central Illinois until 8:30 tonight. At 2:30 this afternoon, National Weather Service Doppler radar indicated slow-moving thunderstorms with very heavy rainfall across the warned area. Doppler radar indicates 2 to 3 inches of rain has already fallen across parts of southern Sangamon County, and additional heavy rainfall is expected. Runoff from this excessive rainfall will cause flash flooding to occur. Some locations that will experience flooding include Auburn, Chatham, Loamie, Mount Auburn, Rochester, Barry, Glenarm, Loder, Roby, and St. Chris Lake State Park. That's a flash flood warning for northwestern Christian County and southern Sangamon County in central Illinois until 8:30 tonight. The Mississippi River is known by many names. They include the Mighty Mississippi, the Great River, and the Big River. For one day over the past weekend, it was known by another name, the Finish Line. Rich Egger reports on the final day of Ragbri, the annual 7-day bicycle ride across Iowa.
Sunshiny day, yeah, a sunshiny day.
A sunshiny day and a party atmosphere greeted bicyclists in Burlington. They headed for the river for the conclusion of Ragbri. The heat in the hills, the wind and the rain of the past week are all forgotten now. It's time to celebrate the 440-mile annual bike ride across Iowa. Ragbri, of course, is a physical challenge. Andrew Lynch of Brooklyn, New York, says it's also a mental challenge.
I'm a New Yorker, and camping is not something that enters into daily life.
You don't camp at Central Park, normally.
I do. There are people who camp in Central Park, but they're not called campers.
Lynch was invited to Iowa by a buddy who was looking for someone to ride with in Ragbri. Lynch says he's exhausted but glad he did it.
You know, if there's any way to see Iowa, as first time in Iowa, I think this is a really cool way to do it.
Come on, stick it to alert.
This year's home stretch featured an extra challenge. Bicyclists could choose to ride up Burlington's Snake Alley.
I cannot make it up that hill.
Back down here.
The brick road rises 6 stories over a single city block. It twists and turns so much that Ripley's declared it the crookedest street in the world.
I'm skipping it.
Many others also skipped it, but many gave it a shot. Some rode all the way up. Others ended up walking their bikes to the top. Many were exhausted by the time they got there. From there, it was all downhill to the river. Throughout the day, riders crowded the port of Burlington to take part in a Ragbri tradition.
You dipping your wheels?
Here's the deal. The ride starts in western Iowa, where bicyclists dip their back tire into the Missouri River. This year, that took place near Council Bluffs. Ragbri concludes in eastern Iowa, where riders dip their front tire into the Mississippi. Gary Obadahl and Cheryl Fonley of Iowa City had just one front tire between the two of them. That's because they rode Ragbri on a tandem bicycle.
You have to have a lot of communication and a lot of patience.
Yeah,
you got to work together.
We had to really work together, going up hills. We had to talk to each other and let each other
both
know.
Both people got to work just as strong as the other.
Yeah. Good stoker this year.
Thank you. I always say, you know, it takes the captain, but I'm the admiral. So I'm the boss. I'm the bad.
Happy riders pose to have their picture taken at the river.
1, 2, 3.
Some lifted their bike overhead in triumph. Barb Bentz of Dubuque celebrated by wading into the river for a few minutes.
This water is awesome.
This is her fourth Ragbri. Spence considers it a personal accomplishment to complete the ride.
It's just been an awesome week, ready to go home, get a shower, and sleep in my bed. Get out of the rain.
Some riders wore wacky stuff. For example, a group called Land Sharks attached shark dolls to their helmets. Others added personal touches to their bikes, such as this cow-shaped horn or this boombox on the back of a bike. Organizers say around 10,000 people registered to ride in Ragbri. Thousands and thousands more rode along for some or all of it. They came from all 50 states, plus 17 other countries. For some, this was their first Ragbri. Others have made the ride ever since it started 37 years ago. What makes Ragbri such a huge draw? Many riders say it's the people they meet, not just their fellow riders, but folks in small towns throughout Iowa, people who provide food, water, and shelter for the bike riders as they make their trek across Iowa from west to east, from the Missouri to the Mississippi. Rich Egger reporting.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. WILL is a listener-supported broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois. Budget troubles are far from over for social service agencies in Illinois. The budget agreement in Springfield may have spared the organizations from a doomsday scenario, but they still can't be sure how much money they'll get from the state. Pam Wiseman is the executive director of Safe Passage, a domestic violence shelter in DeKalb. She's one of the thousands of people who have spent the summer on a budget roller coaster. In this commentary, she takes us along for the ride.
It was sometime in early June. A staff meeting at Safe Passage, DeKalb County's only domestic violence and sexual assault agency. With great relief, I tell the staff that after a year of service cuts and staff layoffs, things are looking up. This year, we'll have more money. We celebrate. A week later, a rumor surfaces from out of nowhere. The Illinois budget for 2010 contains nothing at all for domestic violence and sexual assault. We've been zeroed out. I call someone who knows these things, and I'm quickly reassured that this zeroing out business is a mere tactic, a strategy, a ploy, a political game. So I tell the staff, don't worry, rumors aren't real. There's no problem here. A few days later, I get my new State of Illinois contract. Now, a contract, that's not a rumor. It's definitely not a game. A contract is real. You have to sign it, and then you're held to it. This contract contains an unsurvivable 70% cut in our funding. My choice is to sign it and risk getting almost nothing, or to refuse to sign it and be absolutely assured of it. So I sign. Again, I call someone, and it's repeated to me once more. This is mere political gamemanship. I have to make a choice now. Pull the plug and decimate this organization that took our community 30 years to build, or wait and hold on while our officials hold out. But I risk running out of time and running out of money. An employee shows up for a meeting I've called. She tells me she's afraid I've called her in to fire her. Families in shelter worry about where they will go and whether it will be safe. I assure them that we are not going to close, but the shelter in a neighboring county, well, it already has. Another has laid off 20 staff, and the director there tells me she can make one more payroll, and then she fears she's done. I remind everyone, this is a political game, and we're having some fun now. It's July 1st. I'm hoping to know something. I need to know something. But our officials, well, they've taken a long, well-deserved holiday. It must be awfully hard on them to have to think about this budget stuff all the time. Another week drags on. I can hardly look anyone in the eye. And then I hear, July 14th, that's the day, that's when we'll know. I rush home from work to hear the news. But there is no news. There is no deal. July 14th came and went. Just like our officials came and went. They came to Springfield and went to St. Louis to continue doing there what they could easily have done at home, which is to sit on the sidelines and watch a game. Finally, July 16th, the budget's done. We hear the cuts will be smaller than we feared. And then slowly, we all realize that even this information, well, it's not real either. I thought the game was over. It isn't. I don't know more now than I knew a month ago. And today, I have to start to pull the plug. I can't hold on, all because of a political game. And we're having some fun now.
The commentary of Pam Wiseman. She's the executive director of Safe Passage, a domestic violence shelter in northern Illinois. It's 5 minutes before 3 o'clock, and a reminder that the National Weather Service in Lincoln has issued a flash flood warning for northwestern Christian County and southern Sangamon County in central Illinois until 8:30 Central Daylight Time this evening. At 2:29 p.m. Central Time, National Weather Service Doppler radar indicated slow-moving thunderstorms with very heavy rainfall across the warned area. Doppler radar indicates 2 to 3 inches of rain has already fallen across parts of southern Sangamon County, and additional heavy rainfall is expected.
Selling your home? This could be a good time for an open house.
I had one not so long ago and was swamped with buyers, real swamped.
Home sales have stopped falling and they're actually picking up.
I certainly do sense a turn, yes.
Could the worst really be over for the real estate market? We'll take a look around the country today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana.
The National Weather Service in Lincoln has now issued a severe thunderstorm warning for central Sangamon County in central Illinois until 3:45 this afternoon. At 2:54, National Weather Service meteorologists detected a severe thunderstorm capable of producing quarter-size hail and damaging winds in excess of 60 miles per hour. The storm was located 4 miles southwest of Riverton, or about 4 miles east of Springfield, and was moving northwest at 5 miles per hour. Locations impacted include Riverton and Sherman. This includes Interstate 55 between mile markers 94 and 105 and Interstate 72 between mile markers 100 and 109. Severe thunderstorm warning for central Sangamon County in central Illinois until 3:45 this afternoon. Meanwhile, a flash flood warning continues for northwestern Christian County and southern Sangamon County in central Illinois until 8:30 tonight.
Earth and sky.
Food is without a doubt one of the most exciting fields to study because it is the only intimate commodity. We eat it, and therefore how we eat it has implications for a host of other policy issues around ecosystem protection, hunger, diversity, local economic development, our carbon footprint.
You're listening to Betsy Donald, a geographer at Queen's University in Canada.